Welcome to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. I started this show to talk about all of the interesting, complex, paradoxical, and sometimes uncomfortable aspects of the human experience. If you get anything from this show, the greatest compliment you could give me is to share this show with somebody that you think the message may resonate with, or to head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Additionally, if you want to interact with me, you can follow me at @RickAlexander_ on Instagram. Without further ado, on to the show. Happy Friday. Welcome back to another episode of Morning Coffee. We're going to do something a little bit different today. A couple years ago, I studied the Phoenix myth quite a bit. I'm really interested in the idea of redemption. I think it's the most important concept humanity's ever come up with, right? To understand that you're not defined by what's been, but the glory that will be. Very important to recognize, especially when you're in a place where there's so much destruction, hurt, heartache, strife, and suffering. And so I studied the Phoenix myth quite a bit, and then I wrote it down. I wrote a version of it based on all of the myths that I had studied. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to go through that myth, and I'm going to break it down and talk about it and see how it's relevant to us. We right now are in a sort of cultural Phoenix moment, and then, of course, the opportunity to descend into chaos, to go through the purification of self that makes the emergence of new beauty and new love possible, that's always an individual option that we have. We don't have to wait for anybody to do that. So we're going to talk about that today. The Phoenix lives, like many great teachers, in a world beyond the sun, only crossing and transcending into our world with a message when the cries of humanity become so loud that they reach the ethereal terrace that connects all worlds. To get here, the bird flies through the human psyche and travels eternity via the path of collective wisdom and mythology, the kind that tells a story that is more true than anything we might label as nonfiction today. It's a journey through time that only comes to a close at the right moment for the right person in the right life. There's a scholarly debate about wisdom texts, specifically the Bible. You'll see a lot just because Christianity has dominated the West for so long, about whether or not these stories or these things actually happened. And I'm going to be honest, I see that personally as like a moot point. I don't think that there's any use personally in debating whether or not. Now, I understand everyone's got their own thing with this. It just doesn't matter if it actually happened. It matters if it's true now. If I apply it to my life, will it make my life worse or better? Reality is going to give you feedback on what's true and what's untrue. And so a lot of times when we're dealing with myth and we're dealing with religious topics, I find it useful that we just hold on a little bit loosely, because if you try to squeeze it into literalism, sometimes what happens is you strangle the spiritual meaning of it. And so personally, I like to just consider these things within the context of, are they eternally relevant or not? That's what wisdom is. Knowledge is about being true and coherent for the frame of reference that it exists in. Wisdom is eternally relevant. It's the echo of what's always been and always will be true. It inhabits all living creatures when the stars come together in a way that always makes sense to the stars, but rarely makes any at all to us on the ground. I love this part because when you're going through tough things, right, one of the most beneficial things you can do is have faith that there is a perspective, and maybe even a perspective that will eventually serve you, that you can't see now, that gives coherence and meaning to all of the difficult things that you're going through. Fundamentally, that's what faith is. It's the belief in a perspective, in a reality that you don't have the ability to see from your finite awareness. Now, I understand if you can't go with me there, totally. A lot of people can only believe in the world they've seen. I used to be that way and I suffered because of it, but if that's your prerogative, no worries. But just understand this whole line about making sense to the stars, but not to us. It's like, just have faith in the fact that maybe the things you're going through right now, you have no idea if they're good or bad. So just have faith in the fact that maybe they are good. And it does seem that most of the time when we go through rock bottom moments, over time, they end up being extremely good. So just worth thinking about. The phoenix, while it spends 1,000 human years in radiant beauty, on this night looks a bit weary. There's no moonlight to speak of, but if there were, you would see the lines that time has traced along the bird's eyes that run down into its neck and get lost in the remaining red and gold hue that shimmers from its wings. It spends the entire night working diligently, building a nest with aromatic spices, twigs, and cloves, ensuring that nothing is out of place. You ever have these moments where you are working and working and diligently doing something, and it just seems like nobody gives a shit, and it just seems like it doesn't matter? And, you know, that's a dangerous line, because if you give in to that, you start to feel like there is no point in all of the work. Well, one of the things I'd like to suggest here, based on this myth, is that we are working for something that is bigger than what we can see. And that's the fundamental beauty of having, of living in service to something that is so much bigger than yourself. For example, you know, when you participate in a charity, so Christmas is coming up. I don't know if you guys have the tradition where you kind of like participate in a charity or you know, volunteer somewhere or whatever. But if you do, you notice you're rewarded with a sense of meaning and internal expansion, because it feels like you're part of something bigger than yourself. Well, if you just keep going out and out and out and out, that's God, right? So that, in service to God, it's like in service to the whole. So imagine the amount of meaning that comes in service to something that is bigger than yourself. When you have that, it helps you to continue to work, though you might not ever see the fruits of your labor, even when people aren't really understanding. And so being in service to anything bigger than yourself, when yourself is put in question, when yourself is put in strife, you realize it still makes plenty of sense to just continue to work diligently, because you're working for something bigger than this here moment. As the bird finishes building its nest meticulously with a kind of pride that we should all aspire to in our creations, the night is beginning to reach its blackest moment. You know, our allegiance to the things that we profess to serve are tested when the night is the blackest. There's no question about that. As the stillness of the dark sets in, the bird begins to sing a song that's so beautiful and yet so chilling that the sun, which is currently employed lighting up the opposite end of the world, can't bear to go on without stopping to listen. The song marks the unification of everything, the single point in which destruction and creation collide and once again begin their dance through eternity. Hate buckling under the power of love, pain collapsing into beauty, and sheer darkness becomes flooded with incandescent light. Maybe the hardest pill I've ever had to swallow was the recognition that in our physical universe of time and space, the fundamental way that new beauty emerges is through the destruction of the old. One of the things that keeps coming up in this myth is the idea that we can honor that destruction. When people die, when destruction happens, when chaos ensues, there's a part of us that are human, and a lot of us like to reject that destruction and reject that chaos. But if we can lean into it and honor it, because we ourselves are fundamentally of the nature to go through destruction, of the nature to die. So we honor that which is dying as if it is self. We honor it and still make room for new beauty. This is like master's level living stuff, because it's so difficult to do. But it's worth understanding that it is possible. As the song begins to reach its final note, a single tear falls from the bird's right eye in admiration for the creatures that will never make it out of the rubble. It mourns itself on behalf of the collective. It's kind of what I'm talking about there. You know, at the end of yoga classes, when people say namaste, if you kind of get into the yogic tradition, is that they're honoring that which is within you that is also within me. As the spark gently meets the perfectly constructed nest, the moonless night erupts into illumination as flames consume the once magnificent bird. The sun will patiently check on the ashes 3 times as it revolves around us and keeps a watchful eye on all of creation. As the third dawn begins to creep its way into the forest, a new phoenix begins to emerge from the ashes. You see this motif, this 3-day motif, happening quite a bit. It happens in the Bible a bunch. Jonah is in the whale for 3 days in that story. Jesus is down for 3 days before resurrection. And so that motif appears quite often. But in old times, if you're studying some of these wisdom traditions, one of the things you realize is that they use the number three to just denote more than a couple. And so there's this latent period from destruction before rebirth. We don't just skip to being the phoenix. There's this latent period, and then we can find the emergence of new beauty. But oftentimes, when we're in that latent period, it becomes very difficult because we want to move on. We want to get on with our lives. But we have to have, again, it comes down to faith and trust that it's all going somewhere worth being. Forms an egg with the remains of its ancestors and will prepare to offer the egg as an homage on the altar of the sun. As it stretches its wings, ready to fly east, back into paradise and outside the mortal world, the revived red and gold hue once again shimmers with the beauty of emerging possibility, the kind that we only feel when we have a newborn in our arms or when we're falling for someone so completely that the surrounding world disappears into background noise, taking our burdens and complaints with it. A chance to right wrongs, to fly a new direction, and to feel boundless in the face of innumerable odds. Okay, I'm approaching the 12-minute mark here, so I'm gonna stop this story. We're gonna call it halftime right now. So where we're at in the story, though, is that we've gone through the latent period. We've paid homage to what's come before us. This is a very important thing that we kind of lose in our modern world because we're so focused on what's to come and we're so focused on technology that we're not always present and we're certainly not always honoring of what's gotten us here. Oftentimes I did a whole episode on what happens when you try to transcend without honoring what is. You begin to live a disconnected life, right? You are a certain person who has a certain past. And so honoring that, honoring the best of what was and bringing that into the emergence of what is can be massively beneficial in our lives. I love you guys. We will kick it off Monday with the second part of the Phoenix.